Vayishma Yitro Chohein Midyan Chosein Moshe Eis Kol Asher Asa Elohim LeMoshe Ul Yisrael Amo Ki Hotzi Adonai Es Yisrael Mimitzrayim. Yitro, the minister of Midyan, the father-in-law of Moshe, heard everything that God did to Moshe and to Israel, his people, that Hashem had taken Israel out of Egypt. OU Israel presents...
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Yitro. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 16th day of Shvat. Yesterday was Tu B'Shvat. The 16th day of Shvat, 5775, corresponding this year to February 5th. And that's the story. Let's not delay, but begin with Tehillim Kuflamed, Psalm 130. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shimava koli, tihyena oznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai mia amod, ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivare. Kiviti Adonai kivita nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mishomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem מצרה לרווחה ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. I heard rumors that it's snowy in New York and environs and other places, so I just wanted to report that the Jerusalem weather today is cloudless sky, sunny skies, mild temperature. Need just a little teeny extra covering, a light sweater, a windbreaker, a second shirt, whatever. And we're expecting rain, I think, on Saturday night, Sunday, and colder weather, but it's very, very pleasant out today. I was at a siyum on the occasion of a yahrzeit last night, a lot of very recent Olim there, and they were smiling because somebody was going back to New York and was concerned about the snow, and they said, fringe benefit of coming on Aliyah, milder weather. We have our snow every so often, but nothing much to panic about, and the weather certainly seems to be much nicer than I remember from my New York days, which of course is a long time ago, because now when anyone asks me how long I've been in Israel, I can honestly answer more than half my life so far, and that will stay that way. I 2 weeks ago today passed the turning point. I think I must have mentioned this because I'm very excited about it, but I came on Aliyah when I was 12,181 days old, and I had been, till 2 weeks ago, on Aliyah for 12,181 days, so now I have lived in Israel longer than I lived in Brooklyn and Queens put together. So there. I want to talk about the first verse that we read, that I read, in both Hebrew and in English. Yitro came to Moshe, having heard all that God had done. What did he hear? This is a famous question in commentaries. And the simplest understanding is that he heard of the events in the previous parsha. If we're beginning Parshat Yitro now, in Parshat Beshalach, you have the two main things that he could have heard would be the splitting of the sea and the drowning of the Egyptians, as well as the battle against Amalek. Could have heard a few other things there also, but commentaries pretty much say Kriyat Yamsuf and Milchemet Amalek. And that brought him. Now, some say a surprising thing, that he also heard about revelation at Sinai, the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. And the difficulty in that is that sequentially, in the way we read the Torah, it hasn't happened yet. In fact, in Parshat Yitro, beginning is in chapter 18. By the time we get to 19, we're talking about the events of Israel's arrival at Sinai and the subsequent receiving of the Torah and the Ten Commandments and experiencing God's voice and many, many other wonders related to Matan Torah. So if we take a straight chronological attitude towards the sequence of events in the Torah, then certainly Yitro heard Kriyat Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, the battle against Amalek, and he had not yet heard of Matan Torah. But others feel compelled to say he did hear of Matan Torah, and there is a general rule of the Torah. In Hebrew, it's Ein Seder Mukdam Umu'uchar Batorah, which would loosely render itself into English as the Torah is not necessarily, important word, the Torah is not necessarily in chronological order. There are episodes that are out of sequence time-wise. Of course, I believe, any time that happens, or that possibly is happening, you have to ask, why would this be out of sequence? And because if there is no reason that we could figure out, then it's sort of pointless to put things out of sequence. I will also say, although we'll get into a little bit more detail in a moment, that part of the first chapter of this week's Sedra seems to be after the giving of the Torah, and it's only the beginning of the episode that people question whether it was before or after the receiving of the Torah. But I'll get there and explain it. So I want to now take a look at two things which are sort of related, but they're two separate, I believe, important ideas from the Sedra. One is the fact that the Sedra is named Yitro. Yitro, as the opening verse says, was Kohen Midian. The Stone Chumash translated it as minister of Midian. But Kohen Midian could also mean the idolatrous priest of Midian. According to our tradition, Yitro had experimented and researched all the religions of the known world and came to the conclusion that Judaism was the authentic belief system. And still, it's kind of strange that we should name the Sedra that deals with Matan Torah Yitro. Now, it's true, we name Sedras for an opening word in the Sedra. That's the simple answer to the question. Vayishma Yitro. So the Sedra could have been called Vayishma, like Vayetze Yaakov, Parshat Vayetze. Or, like Vayikach Korach, the Sedra is called Korach, which in itself is a different question, why a Sedra is named after him. But here, the Sedra is called Yitro, and there's a reason for it. There's a message in it, which we'll get to. The other thing is, you have to follow my idea. Up till now, up till chapter 18, not counting chapter 18, we've had a story that started with the Jewish people proliferating, multiplying in Egypt following the end of the book of Bereshit, where Yaakov and family came down to Egypt to be together with Yosef. And Shemot begins with the people in Egypt, the king of Egypt, Pharaoh, decreeing slavery and oppression on the people, seems to be motivated out of fear that this numerous nation, or soon-to-be nation, might be so powerful that they would declare war against Paro or join his enemies and override them. So he enslaves them and issues harsh decrees. Baby boys are to be thrown into the Nile and killed, and all kind of demoralizing slavery. At the beginning of Shemot, Moshe Rabbeinu is born. He is floated on the Nile in a basket, a waterproof basket that his mother made for him. He's watched over by his sister Miriam. The daughter of Paro finds him, adopts him, gets his mother Yocheved as a nursemaid, and raises Moshe in the palace of the Pharaoh. And the oppression intensifies, and Moshe flees because his life is endangered. And when he returns at God's command, we are sort of 80 years later, and God commands him to go to Paro and to demand the release of the people. And then the whole business of the 10 plagues unfolds, and the events of Yetziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus, and the week afterwards, the crossing of the sea, and the month after that, with the miraculous water and the miraculous food in the form of manna, falling from heaven, and the attack by Amalek. That brings us right up to the end of Beshalach. So we're talking about Shmot Va'era Bo Beshalach, four Sedras. And if we were to remove chapter 18, don't worry, I'll put it right back. But if we were to remove it, we would get to Perek Yud Tet, chapter 19, which continues where we left off at the end of Beshalach. Bachodesh HaShalishi, in the third month, Letzeit B'nei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim, of the Exodus, when the people came out of Egypt, Bayom Hazeh, on this day, meaning the first of the month, Rosh Chodesh Sivan, Ba'u Midbar Sinai, the people came to the Sinai wilderness. Vayisu Mirifidim, they traveled from Rifidim, which is where they were when Amalek attacked them, and they arrived at Midbar Sinai, and they camped in the wilderness, and the famous Pasuk, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Hahar, which we'll talk about possibly. And then continues the events of the preparation of the number of days before the actual revelation at Sinai, and it just continues. So the story is complete and intact if we remove chapter 18. But we can't remove chapter 18, so let's put it back. Chapter 18 seems to be a bubble with a different story, not in sequence, as many of the commentaries point out, and inserted here for an obvious reason. I shouldn't say that. Obviously inserted for a reason, and we need to figure out that reason, or read how our sages have figured it out. Because what you have here is Yitro, father-in-law of Moshe, comes to Moshe, and he brings with him Zipporah, Moshe's wife, and her two children from Moshe, Eleazar, Gershom and Eliezer, sorry. And there's a ceremony welcoming Yitro, and Yitro offers sacrifices to God, and Moshe tells him more of what happened. And then a while later, and this is where commentaries say it could have been as much as many months later, that Yitro takes a walk to see how his son-in-law makes a living, so to speak, and he finds him judging all kind of disputes among the people and answering questions from early morning till late at night, lines and lines of people waiting to hear from Moshe. And, as father-in-laws tend to do, he offers advice to his son-in-law Moshe to establish a system of courts, people in charge of 1,000 people, of 100 people, of 50 people, and of 10 people, and minor questions and disputes would be handled by these judges of the 10, of the 50, of the units of 100 and 1,000, and the difficult issues would be brought to Moshe. Moshe approves of that, God approves of that, and it's instituted. But the point is, it doesn't belong in the chronological sequence of this story. Not only that, you've got drama with the plagues, with the events of the night of Yetziat Mitzrayim, and the subsequent crossing of the sea, and coming to Sinai, and receiving the Torah, and in the middle of the story, between chapter 17 and 19, there is chapter 18 about Yitro. So the question becomes compound, where, why do we name the Seder Yitro? Why is the story of Yitro told here? Why does it precede Matan Torah? Why does it break the sequence of the events? Part of the answer, I can't say the answer, part of an answer, is that we are now easing ourselves away from story to something very important, which is called tachlis, which means practical, down to earth. What are we supposed to do? We're out of Egypt, we're becoming a nation. What does that mean? And the way that I see this, and I wrote it in the lead tidbit this week in Torah Tidbits, is the following. We're dealing with a multitude of people, 600,000 plus men of military age, in addition, women and children. We're talking about a population of roughly somewhere between 2 and 3 million people. And the verse that I said was famous and that I was going to talk about, when the Torah makes the statement, after using plural, and they came out of Egypt, and they traveled from Rephidim, and they came to Midbar Sinai, and they camped in the wilderness, all of a sudden it switches to singular. Vayichan Shom Yisrael Neged Hahar, singular Israel, camped opposite the mountain, that they were to receive the Torah. That singular prompts the commentaries, Rashi among them, and maybe chief among them, to say, what's this plural, 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 all of a sudden singular? To show us, to teach us, to tell us that they were ki'ish echad belev echad. They were like one person with one heart, one intention, one goal, one mission, and a sense of unity, which is at the one hand beautiful and something that we should strive for and something, unfortunately, that we have yet to attain again. On the other hand, the problem with such a level of unity is that individuals seem to lose their identity. They are no longer individuals, many, many, many people, they become one mass of humanity. And the individual loses some of his individuality, maybe a lot of his individuality, to this massive group. Now, to put it simply, it's great to be part of a great and special group, but you got to be a person also. And that is lost in this mass of people. It's lost when the Torah says, and they answered in unison, that we will do and we will listen and do and understand everything that God asks us. Where is the individual? The answer to that question is Yitro. Yitro, father-in-law of Moshe, former Kohen of Midian, is a single individual. A single individual who sees and hears what God has done for the Jewish people and comes as a single individual to present himself to join with the nation. And that adds a tremendous amount to the full picture. Because without the individual, then I'm not saying mob mentality, because that usually is negative, but certainly group mentality, mass mentality, and the individual needs to be able to find himself. We each find ourselves when we analyze the individual Yitro. To say this in a contemporary way, I, as an individual, was born in a religious Jewish home, went to yeshivot all my life, have been religiously observant all my life, and as much as I feel like an individual, I have always felt that I was part of Klal Yisrael. And I don't know what choices I would have made if I would have had the opportunity to make choices. Yes, my free will continues. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Yitro. You're listening to Torah Tidbits for Parshat Yitro. No introduction and music. I'll play some music in a little while, I hope, but I want to continue the thought. Yes, I have free choice, but certain choices were made for me. I was brought up a certain way. I didn't rebel against the way I was brought up. I internalized and personalized, to be sure. But my point is that when I meet a Baal Tshuva, a person who grew up in a non-religious home, who came to observance of Torah and mitzvot in his teens or his 20s or 30s, when I meet a non-Jew who is seriously considering conversion to Judaism, and I speak with these people and I try to get a sense of where they were coming from, I think of Yitro. I do not think of the 2 to 3 million people who stood at Har Sinai, although you really have to think of them that way as well. But that's the point. It's the old trees from the forest, forest from the trees. You want to look at a tree, find a tree by itself and look at it, and then you could relate to the tree as a tree. If you find a tree as one of thousands or countless trees in a forest, it's very hard to relate to it as a tree. And maybe that's not its purpose at the point, but that's not the same issue, and I don't want the analogy to run on its own. The point is that God chose to begin Parshat Yitro with a lead-in to the events of Matan Torah by describing the individual, the single person who came to be part of the Jewish people. And it's inspiring. There's another reason which I'll get to in a moment. But as such, it allows us that extra dimension of seeing ourselves and our fellow Jews as individuals. I often say that mathematically the whole is equal to the sum of its parts. In Judaism, we should say the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, because the individual part is not negated when you're talking about the whole. I think the beautiful illustration of that is the way we daven in shul. At a certain point, the Amidah comes, and we stand, and we take three steps forward, and we speak to God. Hashem, Sifas Haytiftach, open my lips, Ufi, my mouth, Yagid Tehilatecha, shall say your praise. For 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, however long it takes for the Amidah, we are individuals, one and one with God. That's the significance and symbolism of taking three steps forward. Everybody else, no matter how many people in shul, they're all at this moment beside the point. We need to be mindful of them. For example, we can't daven the Amidah out loud because that would bother other people, so we do it silently or very, very quietly. But during the time that we're saying the Amidah, we are individuals. Comes time when everyone or most people have finished the Amidah, now the Chazan, also known as the Shaliach Tzibur, the one who was sent by the community to represent them, repeats every word of the Amidah on behalf of the whole Tzibur. Our role is to listen, to answer Amen, to say Kat Ekedusha, together with the Chazan. But it's his job as representative of the community to take the individual who, in their tens or hundreds, however large the shul is, have said their own private silent Amidah, and now bring us all together with the repetition, with Kedusha, which needs at least a minion. A person, individual, can say Kedusha. A tzibur can. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts, but it is made up of the parts. And that's part of what I feel about Yitro. Since we have the mitzvot of Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho, remember the Shabbat and sanctify it, as well as the prohibition of malacha on Shabbat in the fourth commandment of the Aseret HaDibrot, let's have a zmira of Shabbat to put us into that mood, and we'll talk more. Ki eshmera Shabbat el
Shmera Shabbat.
That was from an album by Sam Glazer called The Songs We Sing, Ki Eshmera Shabbat. Okay, let's get back on track here. Next week, I could talk about the following, but I'll just mention it now. After the dramatic episode of Matan Torah, which was sort of interrupted, but not interrupted, by the story of Yitro, we have Parshat Mishpatim, which is detail, 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 mitzvah, 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 53 of them, as if finally the Torah says, settle down, and here's the daily life schedule. But at the end of Mishpatim, we have the continuation of the events of Matan Torah. I believe that God purposely took a piece of one thing and put it here, and a piece of that and put it there, to make the following important point. Revelation at Sinai is not just, was not just, a mountain with fire and smoke and lightning and sound of the shofar and thunder. And according to our sources, I forgot the technical term for it, but I could look it up. There was a mixing of senses where you could see thunder, see the sound of the shofar, as well as hear. And awesome, awesome events. But that's not the story. The story is we got the Torah. We don't become angels because we have the Torah. We are human beings with day-to-day mundane lives. But our mundane lives are no longer mundane because daily halakha guides us. I don't know if this is exactly the point to mention this, but I've said it in the past. To me, if I had to give a glimpse into Jewish law to someone from the outside, I would say, you know, we have a blessing that we recite to God after we come out of the bathroom, having successfully attended to our call of nature, or however you want to call it, in thanks and appreciation for his creation of the human body, and thank God that mine is now functioning properly, and we say a blessing. There is not any area of human behavior that is not touched by Jewish law. The word halakha is not law, even though halakha is Jewish law. The word halakha is based on walking through life, and everything you do in life has mitzvot and Torah to attend to. And that's the beauty of Judaism. And maybe that's what attracts a Yitro type. Remember that the experience in Sinai was not one-sided. It was a mutual covenant between God and the people of Israel. He said to us, Va'atem tihiyu li, you will be for me, Mamlechet Kohanim v'goy kadosh, a nation of Kohanim and a kingdom of Kohanim and a holy nation. We said, everything you tell us we will do, and that's our basis of our mutuality. We are the chosen people because God chose to give us the Torah, and we chose to accept it. And it was offered to anyone, and it's available to anyone. We are not an exclusive club. We have a special relationship with God, and anyone who sees that and wants that can pursue it. The Aseret HaDibrot. I like to raise them up, but also keep them within perspective. What do I mean by that? There has been for centuries a warped view that God gave the people of Israel the Ten Commandments, and all the rest of the Torah was written by Moshe Rabbeinu. So much so is that not true, that Aseret HaDibrot were purposely kept out of prayer. We include the Shema in prayer, we include the Song of the Sea in prayer, and many other parts of the Torah, but not the Aseret HaDibrot. Many Sidurim have the Aseret HaDibrot as a personal private reading after you daven, if you have a few more minutes. But it is not part of prayer. There is a whole controversy in the religious Jewish community about whether the custom to stand for the Torah reading of Aseret HaDibrot is a proper custom or not. The Ten Commandments are definitely great. They have a position in things because they were the down payment, we'll say, at Sinai. On the other hand, they make up part of the Torah. And I like to say to people that the Ten Commandments contain 13 verses of the Torah and 14 or 15 of the 613 mitzvot of the Torah. Wait a minute. A mitzvah is a commandment, right? The Ten Commandments are not Ten Commandments. They are 14 commandments or 15 commandments. What's going on? Well, part of the answer is that the English phrase, the Ten Commandments, is not the best translation of what the Torah calls the Ten. It calls it Aseret HaDivarim, the Ten Items. We call it in Hebrew Aseret HaDibrot, the Ten Statements. But if you're counting mitzvot out of 613, 14 are counted in the Yitro version of the Aseret HaDibrot, and a 15th mitzvah is counted from slightly different wording in the Aseret HaDibrot that are repeated in Parshat Vo'et Chanan. So even that alone, 14 or 15 mitzvot, puts it as part of Taryag, and therefore part of the whole Torah. By the way, the Aseret HaDibrot are read with a very dramatic set of Torah notes. You feel the drum rolls and the crescendos. And yet, Minhag Yerushalayim, the custom of Jerusalem, not everybody in Yerushalayim follows it, but Minhag Yerushalayim is to read the fancy, dramatic notes only on Shavuot morning. When you read the Aseret HaDibrot in the flow of the weekly portion, namely Yitro this week and Vo'et Chanan in the summertime, you read them in their second set of notes, called Ta'amei HaTachton, where they are read the same way the rest of the Torah reads. Put away the snare drums, put away the gongs and the cymbals, read them like any other pasuk in the Torah. And it's good to have both perspectives, because they are special, but they are part of the Torah. And it's a very important part of our belief that the entire Torah was given by God to the people of Israel through Moshe Rabbeinu in his generation and passed down from generation to generation. So you get both feelings when you hear the dramatic way of reading the Aseret HaDibrot on Shavuot morning and when you hear the more prosaic way of reading it on Parshat Yitro. Those who don't follow Minhag Yerushalayim, which is most of the Jewish world, will read it in the dramatic upper notes, Ta'ameha Elyon, And they are not read as verses in the Torah, they are read as commandments, as dibrot, as devarim, as statements. So you have a little bit of both. I'd like to make a comment about the immediate aftermath of the presentation of the Ten Commandments of Revelation at Sinai, because it has an impact on Judaism throughout its history. The people panicked when they heard God's voice and requested of Moshe not to hear God's voice, but that Moshe should tell them what God wants and they will follow. Now that's almost an appalling suggestion, except for the fact that God agreed to it. And he said, okay, I'll make you a deal. I won't speak directly to you, but you have to commit yourself to following the Torah as transmitted faithfully through the generations, first by Moshe Rabbeinu and then by those who followed. And that's the deal. If you don't agree to that, then you're going to have to hear God's voice, which the people apparently did not want. So that's what Judaism is. That's what it became. We do not have individual revelation from God. We have an unbroken tradition about revelation at Sinai, and we are committed in our generation to study Torah, to study commentaries, to study halacha, to study the whole gamut of Judaism, and treat it as if we are standing at the foot of Mount Sinai receiving the Torah for the first time. I mentioned earlier a word that I brushed past. I'll focus on it now. Bachodesh HaShlishi, Letzeit B'nei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim, Bayom Hazeh, on this day, they came to Midbar Sinai. Rashi asks the obvious question. When you're telling a story, it's Bayom Hahu, on that day, not on this day. And that's Judaism. Judaism does not go for the once upon a time, a long time ago story. It goes for personalizing and making contemporary that which originally was a long time ago. So we must learn Torah. We must appreciate Torah. We must approach Torah as a new personal experience, as if today we are receiving it afresh. And we do this today and tomorrow and the next day and the next year and on and on. There has to be an enthusiasm and an excitement for Torah, not just academic book learning. This is the difference between many other readings and other fields of study and Judaism. Judaism is not just your mind, it is your heart and soul. It is totally all-encompassing. And this is why we say in prayer, V'ha'er einenu besorasecha, light up my eyes with your Torah. Not teach me Torah. Yes, teach me Torah and I'll learn Torah, but make me excited. Light up my eyes to Torah. V'dabek libenu b'mitzvotecha, let my heart cling to your commandments. Not just go through the motions and doing them, but let me get excited about them. The drama of Har Sinai engendered that excitement, but there's a command built in there, in the episode of Mount Sinai, and that is V'kidashtem Hayom Umachar. Sanctify yourselves today and tomorrow. Every day, Torah should be a new, exciting experience. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.